Right, so let's just take a moment here and have everybody kind of take a deep breath. Let yourself get into your right mind here if you can. Just let yourself kind of breathe a little. Nice. Let your shoulders drop. There you go. And take a moment and scan your day. Think about what was great today. Was there anything today that really stood out for you? Anything that just kind of felt like a stellar moment? Today I helped somebody get their driver's permit, this young man, and I was so excited to see him, his face when he passed the test at the DMV. It erased all the time that we sat there waiting. It was really great. And just taking a moment to let yourself take in that really spectacular moment today. You probably had a few. And just ground yourself now. Allow yourself to just be connected to the earth. There you go. See if you can key into your heart beating in your chest. Just take another deep breath and release your day. Just let it go and let yourself kind of gently listen to what's around you. See if you can hear some birds right now. Let that sound help you take you deeper. Good. That's it. And then just call your energy back. Just imagine like a big gold sun above you. Call your energy back from all the people you've interacted with, the places that you went to. And like rivers of gold, just go ahead and fill that golden sun up. Let it get nice and full. That's your energy. And then bring that golden sun in. Just fill yourself up with that beautiful gold light. That's great. There may have been some really great people in your day, and I just invite you right now as you're resting to go ahead and just send a thank you to them. Imagine like a little postcard sending them, thank you. Thank you for being in my life. We have all of these helpers, you know, seen and unseen. And it's definitely a good idea to take time to thank them for being there for you. And then just thank yourself. Take a moment and send yourself some loving kindness. As your heart's beating in your chest, just imagine sending the message to all of you, inside and outside, that you are wonderful. Today we're going to be talking a lot about forgiveness, and sometimes it can be really hard to take in that message that you're wonderful when you've got some things you need to forgive yourself for. So I'm just going to encourage you right now to imagine taking all the things that you need to give yourself a break on, all that huge list of things you don't do well or haven't done right, and just put it to the side. Imagine all of that could just fly away from you and you could just resonate at a place of thinking that you're wonderful. Let yourself just have that, even if it's only for 10 seconds today. Yeah, it's not about doing things perfectly. It's about trying really to forgive yourself and others as much as you can. That's what it's about. Okay, and so just take a moment here and allow yourself to just relax. And I'm going to put on Marianne Williamson, who's going to talk about forgiveness. And she's actually being interviewed by Oprah Winfrey in this. So, here you go.
You have been a spiritual friend and counselor to me for years. And I can't remember even what the problem was. I was calling you up crying about something. or bemoaning a situation, and you said to me, for whoever it was had done something to me, it was a deep betrayal. I can't even remember who or what it was. And you said, you want to change it, pray for them.
That's
and
right.
I went, I cannot pray for them. You want me to pray for them?
Yes. I say to people in my lectures all the time, okay, here's your homework. Pray for that person's happiness for 30 days. Every morning, 5 minutes if you can, because that's what alchemy is. If I pray for somebody...
Who is causing me harm,
right,
or I feel has harmed me.
But if I pray, your greatest power to change the world, A Course in Miracles says, is your power to change your mind about the world.
Yes.
And all minds are joined. There's really no place where you stop and I start. So if I pray for you, if I pray for your happiness, my mind, one of two things will happen. Either you will behave differently or I won't care. The alchemy will occur, and I will be
But in
lifting.
The beginning, it's hard. You know, if somebody has really harmed you, because I remember when you told me that, I was like, okay, I'm going to pray for them. You can't even bring yourself to, I mean, how do you pray for somebody who you feel has really, really harmed you?
So what? It's easy to sit there with the anger and the toxicity and the bitterness? That's easy? When people say this is hard, what's hard is walking around with this anger. That's even harder.
And blame.
And blame.
You know, one of the things that you say to love is that it's so much easier to bless someone than to blame them. So that's what you're
and
talking
not immediately.
About. And not immediately.
But
that's
also,
what I'm saying. It's hard to do immediately.
But since the universe is self-organizing and self-correcting, if anybody did anything to me that harmed me, if anybody did anything to me that was a transgression or betrayal, the universe is already on it. The universe has a way to make sure that I get whatever in the material world that person took away from me. I call that the principle of divine compensation. But if my heart is closed, then I won't be able to receive the miraculous new possibility that
That's
the universe is bringing.
The principle of divine compensation, not the same thing as reciprocity, as what
no,
goes
out. No, it's different.
It's different?
It's the divine compensation means if I have an experience of you,
yes,
and I do something where I deflect a miracle, something wonderful that might have happened, and I deflect that miracle, or if you were to do something that deflected a miracle, the miracle, the possibility, what might have been blocked by me. The possibility might have been blocked by you. But the Course in Miracles says it is held in trust for you by the Holy Spirit until you are ready to receive it. So, as long as I keep my heart open, the universe will just find another vessel, will find another way. It could be another person, it could be another time, it could be another situation. Yes, but it's there in the universe. Whatever love is yours, and the love that is yours is by definition the love that the universe, as the handwriting of God, intends, because just like the embryo turns into a baby and the bud blossoms, your life is already programmed in the mind of God to its highest creative possibility. Everything fabulous that could happen is already programmed in the ethers of the universe. The blueprint is already there.
So does it matter then what I do?
Yes, because it's like a file in a computer. If my heart's not open, I don't download the possibility on earth as it is in heaven. So it's a file. It's an undeletable file. But if I don't bring it down to the screen, if I stay in bitterness, what I'll get on the screen is bitter. That doesn't mean it's not in the computer. It
just
means it's not what
water.
I pushed in the...
I just got that in the biggest way.
Yeah.
That is really good.
Yeah. That's great.
That's good. I need to take a break. That's really good. I just got that. It's all there. All there. And you just need to download it. And God's always waiting.
Go. And that was Marianne Williamson talking about the power of forgiveness and giving ourselves a little break. Very, very important. Want to really emphasize that message out there. So many of us kind of take a twisted pride in being hard on ourselves. And it serves no one. Believe me, it serves no one at all. And so I just invite you to, just even for this next hour, to really contemplate what you need to let yourself off the hook for. Because that's what we're going to talk about today. KALS FM 107.3 in Occidental, California. You can hear us live on the web at kows.fm. You can also find opportunities to give to us here at KALS. We are a publicly supported radio, and we definitely appreciate your contributions. If you're able to, please send us something. We do have a PayPal button there, and you can just send us a quick $5 or 10 if you're feeling really, really generous. And we will put that to use. We will keep this station on the air. And I have a PSA here really quickly. eScript is an easy way to support COWS Community Radio. Donate at no cost to you through eScript shopping. Here's how it works. Sign up online with your own ATM or credit card and choose KOWS Radio, COWS Radio, as the recipient. Once you sign up, up to 5% of your purchases at stores who honors eScript purchases will automatically go to your designated nonprofit organization through your credit card or ATM card. So go to eScript.com to find out more. All right, so we're going to get started with Frank Ferranti here. I've got him on the line. One moment there. Frank Ferranti, let's see.
At your service.
Oh, great. Gotcha. Excellent. So, Frank, I saw your movie about a year ago. You were it was a special screening, May I Be Frank.
It was special for you.
It was, you know, it felt like it was. It was really interesting because there were so many messages in that film that came through that I felt were just for me. And it was funny. It was like a friend had kind of dragged me to it. I was kind of tired that night and wasn't really sure if I wanted to go out. And then I was so moved by that story. I was like, I got to talk to this guy. And I did introduce myself afterwards. But, of course, there was like a crowd of adoring people all around you. And I'm an introvert, so I didn't, you know, I just kind of maybe shook your hand and ran away. But now
I've
got you.
I remember you were the only introvert. I remember you.
Good. Excellent. So, Frank, for those who aren't familiar with your film, could you tell us a little bit about how you got started in it and what that journey's been like?
Well, the journey continues, first of all. You mean what it was like, how I found myself how I found myself at Cafe Gratitude or...
Exactly,
I was living in San Francisco at the time. I was in graduate school. 2007, because I was very busy, so I didn't get my high school diploma until I was 50.
Wow.
And I had addictions to contend with. I was very busy. And so, I got my high school diploma at 50 and worked my way, into UCSB and got a degree in history and then, got accepted into the humanities graduate program at San Francisco State. So I moved to San Francisco finished my degree at UCSD from Santa Cruz. And I moved from Santa Cruz to San Francisco, not exactly culture shock, I might add.
Right.
From one hippie bastion to the other. And so I was a very unhappy person at the time. I was about, 300 pounds. I was depressed. I was very lonely, depressed, and 300 pounds. And so I just knew something had to change in my life, but I didn't know how to do it. I didn't even know what that meant. I just knew that I couldn't keep doing what I was doing, and I couldn't see how life could continue within this vibration. One of the things I like about the film is that everything about the film and the progression of the film has something to rest on the shoulders of someone doing something nice for somebody else. And at the time, my cousin Michelangelo in San Diego was ill, and I was going to go rent some Italian movies because he's from Sicily, and I was going to go rent some Italian movies and go visit him and hang out. And so I went to this store in San Francisco that specializes in foreign titles. And on my way to this part of San Francisco, I saw in the distance a sign that said Cafe Gratitude. And I've been in the 12-step world for quite a while. And in the 12-step world, gratitude is a central virtue. It's one of the things we say is that a grateful heart will not drink. I add to that, a grateful heart not only will not drink, but is less likely to create damage in anybody else's life. Mm. So I thought somebody from the program was being clever and opened up a coffee shop. So I get my tape and my videos, and I'm dating myself, and I go to, and it was a dark and dreary February evening. It was there was a mist in the air. The ground was the concrete was moist. And it was the grayness and dismal atmosphere was a direct reflection of my internal landscape at the time. And I come upon this place, and It was warmly lit. There weren't too many people in there. It was a February evening. And there was this young woman standing in the window who looked like Pocahontas with two long braids. And I thought, well, this place looks okay. So and as I said earlier, I was very, very lonely. I was so lonely, I used to ring my own doorbell to hear what a visitor would sound like.
So I
walk into this warmly lit, sparsely populated restaurant, and as I open the door, little bell goes off, and all of a sudden I'm met with this fanfare. Hi, welcome, come on in, we're so glad you're here. And it was like 18 years worth of greetings in 2 seconds. And standing in front of me was Ryland, one of the guys that shot the film. And I walked over, you know, sweet guy, young, he was young. These guys were very young, too. They were, like, in their early 20s. And so I go up to this guy, and I said, hey, man, I had to have a cup of coffee in Cafe Gratitude. I figured somebody here is in recovery. And he looked at me and smiled and said, we're all recovering from something, aren't we? And I thought, I immediately realized this guy was not in a 12-step program and just assumed that maybe he smoked a joint before going to work. and I looked around and I noticed that there was no stove, there was no espresso machine, and he noticed me, he saw me looking around and he said, well, we're a raw food vegan restaurant. And I thought, raw food, how do you cook that? I didn't know anything about that world. I thought vegan was a planet that Spock directed Chekhov to plot a course for. I really didn't know anything about that world. And so I kept coming back, and it wasn't because of the food. There was a kindness and a welcoming in that atmosphere that appealed to me very much. It wasn't the food. There was another part of my being that actually needed more nurturing than my body did at the time, and my body needed a lot of nurturing too. Mm-hmm. But I kept going back because they were very nice people and idealistic and young and bright and shiny. I mean, the guys that shot the film were so young they could have shared a razor for 6 months and still be sharp. they were very, very young. So I kept going back, and then one day, Ryland came to my table and he says, hey, Frankie, you know that movie Supersize Me? I said, what's with that healthy guy eats himself sick after a month of fast food? He goes, yeah, well, we want to do something similar to that. We want to take a guy who's not well, which was a rather generous description for my condition at the time, and take a guy who's not well and feed him this food of ours and have him go to holistic health practitioners and do colonics, which was another thing I didn't know about. And we want to film it, and we want you to be the guy. And I said, okay. And I didn't think anything of it, really. I had no idea of what I was getting myself into, and neither did they. And what happened over the course of the next 42 days was really quite fascinating. And we had actually, as I said, we had no idea of what we were doing. We didn't even have a camera at the time. When we finally got a camera, it was because somebody that in the community got a job, a really good job in Hollywood, and he needed the latest and the greatest equipment. And he had the equivalent of the iPhone 3, and now there's the iPhone 5, and that's, you know, the camera-wise. And so the iPhone 3 actually is still a pretty amazing piece of technology. And so we had this camera and then we made a boom mic out of PVC pipe.
Wow.
and began the shooting. We shot for 42 days and then, the tapes were in a shoebox in Carrie's closet for like 8 months because we didn't know how to edit the film.
Right.
You know, we had no idea. And then an editor showed up, and he devoted the next year and a half of his life to putting the narrative that you know together.
Right.
And I've been touring with the film and doing talks on the mind-body-spirit connection to health and wellness for the past 2 years. And I'm also getting, we're ready to launch a website for coaching in the areas in which I know a little something about. And the journey continues.
Right. Yeah, and what was so interesting about this film, I mean, my friend had described it to me. She's like, well, it's about this guy who goes for raw food for 40 days. And I was like, huh. But it really isn't. I mean, that the raw foods, that whole, that's just a small part of the journey. Really, to me, it was about forgiveness. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, was that the forgiveness was what was so, so prevalent in the film and what was what created such a transformation for you. The food helped, but it was really the way you turned your soul around in that film that was so moving and funny often. So this is the movie May I Be Frank. And I'm going to cut to a Beatles song here, Tomorrow Never Knows, and we'll be right back with Frank Ferranti.
I love that song.
Oh, good, good. I picked that just for you. Great. That was the Beatles, Tomorrow Never Knows, here at Cows FM 107.3 in Occidental, California. I've got a quick PSA here from the French Garden restaurant. I don't know if you've been to the French Garden. That's in Sebastopol, but it is yummy. The French Garden uses freshly harvested produce from their very own garden in Sebastopol. French Garden is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and offers outdoor patio seating. Happy hours available on weekdays from 4:30 to 6:30, and there's live music on the weekends in the Bistro Bar. So, the French Garden is located at Sebastopol at 8050 Bodega Avenue, and the phone is 824-2030. I highly suggest a trip to the French Garden. And we're back with Frank Ferranti. Frank, we had been talking a little bit about recovery, because that is, in a way, also what the film was about. You were talking about recovery, and I was sharing with you, I know some people who are in recovery right now that are having problems with the 12 steps in particular, believing that they don't have control, or they have to submit to this higher power, higher force. And so I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about your recovery process and what that was like for you. Oops. Sorry. Hold on, Frank. Sorry. I had to, hang on, Frank. I had the wrong level up there. There we go. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to, if I may, address something you mentioned a little earlier about how the food is only part of it. And I'll get to this in a second. I really appreciate that so much because one of the things that I think really inhibits people from going further is the notion of the magic bullet, that if they just change their diet, that everything else, it's sort of like the lottery. You think that if you win the lottery, that everything's going to be okay, and you can look at what happens to so many people that win the lottery, their lives, many of them that end up tragically. There's no magic bullet, and bullets, by the way, are designed to kill you. Mm-hmm. There's no magic bullet. It's an organic and harmonious confluence of practices that enable me to live a life that is worth living. And that has to do with the way I eat, that has to do with who I talk to, how I express my love, how I receive love, who I eat with and how I buy my food, how I walk in the world. And all of those things, and I really appreciate you bringing that up, because it's easy to become evangelistic about one aspect of it, because then you don't have to be introspective. And without, an unexamined life is not worth living. I didn't say that, but we've all heard that.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to acknowledge you for taking that position.
Yeah, I mean, I've met plenty of people who are, you know, yoga fanatics and raw food, vegan fanatics, and I feel like they're missing the point. It's like that's all they focus on, and they don't quite get that they're actually using that as another barrier between, it's something to compete about, and they don't really get that it's actually about trying to be closer to God, which is in a way being closer to others, right? I remember someone said that, like, your true measure of your love for God is measured in how you love other people.
Indeed. Right. Indeed. And how you receive that love as well. Because if you're not a good receiver, you're really not a good giver.
Mm.
And I'm saying that because, most of the stuff that I talk about, I'm learning I just continue to learn myself. If I want to know something, I'll read about it. If I want to master it, I'll teach it. And so I'm right there with everyone else. I was terrible at receiving, and it was because I didn't feel worthy. And as long as I'm not feeling worthy, then I'm not fully participating and fully present in what's going on around me. I'm somehow in some type of defensiveness.
Mm.
Now, getting back to your original question.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we went somewhere else, but that's okay. That was good stuff too.
Yeah, I'm just always so happy that I still have enough of a short-term memory to draw back to where you were. So you asked about the whole 12-step higher power, submitting, and the first step says we were powerless. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable, and that's the first step. And then if you could change those words, from alcohol to anything you want, you can turn it into a love relationship. People really have a reluctance to surrender. It's like this bad word. And it's funny. It's not until I surrender my will, in the sense that when I stopped drinking, it was because I had to look around me, and my best thinking of that day had me surrounded by paramedics trying to revive me.
Nice.
That was my best thinking. That's where it got me. And I had to surrender. I had to surrender that to the notion that I had to go somewhere else for help because my thinking was killing me. And I was powerless over my addiction until I got help. It's not a one size fits all. Some people, because God is mentioned frequently throughout the 12-step literature, people get upset about that if they're atheists. Well, there's in a 12-step world, you don't have to believe in anything. It's just that you have to believe that, you know, you don't have to believe in anything. There's no requirement. It's not like in a universalist religion that if you don't accept Jesus as your personal Lord and Savior, you're doomed for hell. No. It's not like that at all. I personally believe in God. I am not a religious person. I'm not a religious person, but I certainly believe in God, and I'm comfortable with that. And if somebody's not, that's okay too, you know.
So what do you do, like, let's say, to protect your sobriety? You and I were talking about this earlier too, about how there's this hidden curriculum, right? That these successful people learn how to be centered and ride the wave when they're when they're on the edge and they're feeling frayed and alone. Like, what do you do to call yourself back home? What do you do to keep yourself from reaching for a drink or whatever? How do you tend to yourself then?
Okay, well, I can use today as an example. I mean, I don't have to be, I don't have to draw a metaphor. I can tell you today, to be very honest, I woke up today and I woke up in fear. Mm. And I woke up questioning my life. And by the way, there wasn't anything that happened. Actually, it was a lovely, evening. I had a very lovely evening. I had some great books that I was reading the night before. It was very, very pleasant. It was very pleasant, so there wasn't anything. But I woke up in a terrible state of anxiety, questioning the value of my life. What was I doing? I felt like George from It's a Wonderful Life. You know, when George was on the bridge and he's thinking, "I'm worth more dead than alive." You know. Mm. Okay, so I have that situation, and my heart, my chest is tight, And what I realize in retrospect, I am completely in the illusion. I forgot who I am, and I felt disconnected from God and my fellows. And what happens when I feel that way is the Geiger counter goes all the way to alert, and I'm freaking out. Mm-hmm. So what do? I get up, and what I do every morning is I read the Course in Miracles. I read a subchapter, and then I read a lesson. And then I set my clock for 10 minutes of meditation. And sometimes it's really hard. It's usually 5. But when I'm really messed up, I challenge myself and I do 10. And then if I'm still in a bad place, I call someone. And sometimes I just have to put one foot in front of the other and ride it out. And then eventually I come out of it. You know, I used to have a sign on my door before I left the house. It said, "Stay sober and do no harm." You know, and those two things are inextricably linked for me. Mm. And my thing is that, okay, so this morning, let's say, you know, like hypothetically, I would have called you and you talked me off the ledge. And then 2 days later, you might call me, and I'm talking you off the ledge.
Right.
And one of my favorite sayings in the world is, "Thank God we're not all crazy on the same day."
Right.
Actually, there's a swear word in there, but we're on the radio, so
right.
You can figure it out.
Yes. Yeah, and that is one thing to be grateful for when you're looking for something to be grateful for. It's like, okay, it's probably just me right now. And
right.
I bet if I call someone I really care about that they will be able to help me right now.
Yeah, you know, and sometimes, you know, and really the thing is that, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to mention this, is that when I look at people on stage, like, you know, the big names in transformational oration, and they look like, I look at these people and I feel like wrong. I feel like I'm living my life wrong. And in fact, they have bad days too. But
yeah.
I look at them and sometimes then there's a tendency to look at those people and put them and they're like exemplars and paragons. And they're just human beings and they have their bad days too.
Right.
And that's everybody. And I think it's important for people to know that there is no place. It's a journey, and there's times when the weather gets terrible. Like, there's times of really rough weather. And that doesn't mean that all the work you've done is null and void, because all of a sudden you have a thunderstorm going and your house just got struck by lightning. You know, it doesn't mean that everything that happened in that house up until that moment is null and void.
Right. I think that's really important to remember. I think in our darkest moments that we can definitely get into a place where we feel like I'm all alone and it's a total waste of my time. And I think it's really important to remember, like, this is just, it's just this moment that that's happening. It's just this moment. All right. We're going to cut to a song here. I've got Nina Simone. I'll be right back with Cows FM.
My true love's hair, this face so soft and wondrous fair, the bluest
Simone and Black is the Color here at Cows FM 107.3. I'm Moksha Lee. This is In Your Right Mind, and we broadcast live Monday nights from 6 to 7 p.m. at 107.3 and at KOWS.FM. And you can listen to all these great podcasts of interesting people that I have had the pleasure to speak to at inyourrightmind.word, WordPress.com. All right, we're going to come back with Frank Ferranti, who said he was at my service. Are you?
Indeed. Here I am.
Good. So, you know, one of the things that kind of, which was really fun and gratifying and what we love to see is a big physical transformation. And so in the beginning of the film, you were like about 300 pounds. And then at the end, you were less. And then you came in and spoke to the audience and even less then. And I'm wondering, how is that going for you? How is your health these days?
Well, my health is great, actually. I have maintained pretty much. I mean, I gained about 15 pounds on the road, but I got to deal with that. But essentially, I lost about 120 pounds, and I've maintained it, and so my health is okay. I'm still colorfully neurotic, and and I have my moments, but for the most part, I think I'm pretty healthy. I don't have, unlike a lot of people in my demographic, I'm not taking any medications of any kind. I take a ridiculous amount of like supplements. I was consulted by these holistic people that all these things are good, and so I'm not sure about that. I mean, Gary Knoll is the guy to talk to about that stuff, but I talk to people that I think are much more knowledgeable than me, and so I take my cayenne, I take my whatever that stuff is in the meal, but they're all natural and all organic and non-GMO. Supplements that I take, but that's about it. You know, I have the most boring medicine cabinet west of the Mississippi.
That's good. That's a good goal for a former addict. That's a great goal to have.
Yeah, I got Q-tips in there. That's about it.
Go crazy
organic,
with those Q-tips.
Organic cut. Organic cut.
There you go. How has your life has changed quite a bit with this film? And I would like to direct people to your website. It's mayibefrank.com. That's correct, right, Frank? That's where I saw it.
MayIBeFrankMovie.com.
Oh, MayIBeFrankMovie.com. Thank you. And I was interested in how is the touring life? Because you were working on your master's degree as well at the same time. Is that right? While you were touring, or?
Well, for a while, I realized I still have a dissertation to do, and I couldn't. I think I had one more semester of coursework, and then the thesis. To do, and I really on tour, I could not see myself carrying a full load and touring at the same time. I mean, I know there's people that can do it. I just had a hard time because in a graduate seminar, typically you have about 15 books and 2 research papers to do, and I don't work well on an airplane, and anyway, I didn't do it. So I made that choice. So it's still an option. Mm-hmm. And but my life changed radically because, for one thing, I found myself in a position that I never in a million years thought I'd be in, and that is talking to people about how to live in their right mind. And I was out of my mind for most of my life.
Right.
In one way or another. I mean, it was a deliberate choice to check out, either with drugs or some behavior to offset being present.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, I'm in this place where I'm talking to large groups of people about how to transcend addictions and how to come, how to land in the present. And for a long time, I felt like an imposter because what do I, I just didn't know. I didn't ever anticipate being in that position, but because of this film and the transformation that took place, I became the spokesman for health and wellness, the mind-body-spirit connection and transformation. You know, and a few years ago, I was stumbling out of rehab. You know, how did that happen? You know, and so I had to reassess who I really am, and it seemed to me that I heard this great quote by Mandela. He said, sometimes God comes behind you and taps you on the shoulder and says, tag, you're it. And I think what I've been learning how to do is step into the life that I was intended to be in. I mean, when I went back to school, Well, when I went, actually to school, I practically didn't even have any high school transcripts. My intention was to be a teacher. And my vision of being a teacher was, you put on an off the rack suit and you drive your Camry to a building and you go into a classroom and you teach. That was my vision. Instead, God had, or the universe had a different plan for me. I became a teacher, but of a subject that I didn't realize I was studying for in classrooms far broader than what I conceived. And I gotta be honest, but there are still times when I'm still like in awe of it. I can't believe it. I step onto a stage and a room full of people applaud me for having corrected some terrible mistakes that I made in my life. It's fascinating.
But that's part of what makes your story so accessible to many people, is that we do sense the real man there. We do sense your authenticity and your struggle with it. And that is actually more inspiring in a way. And I did want to talk to you about forgiveness and how that process worked its way through you. How did you work with forgiveness? How did you learn about forgiveness?
Can I tell a story? It'll take about 2 minutes.
Of course.
Literally. I had a tremendously deep resentment to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. I grew up Catholic. And I'm not going to expand on that. This is just information.
Right.
But I had a very, very harsh experiences with the Catholic Church. And for years, I harbored that resentment after I left. If I were to meet you, within a few minutes of us meeting, somehow I would introduce you to this resentment of mine and enroll you in my army of people that were against the Catholic Church, and we would, we would all regale in my cause against the Catholic Church. Anyway, it was a part of me. My resentment to the Catholic Church had become a part of me. So fast forward about 20 years, or maybe more, and I was going out with this girl who was interested in Catholicism. She had no religious background, and I took her to this cathedral, and there was a mass going on, and she was completely enthralled with the whole thing, and the symbols, and the art, and all of that. To me, it didn't mean anything. I was explaining it all to her. To me, I look at going to a Catholic church, I think of the Inquisition and the extradition of the Nazis. I'm not very compassionate about it.
Right.
I wasn't. Anyway, so she decides she wants to be a Catholic, and she sets up an appointment for me and this Monsignor against my, I didn't know it, but she says, I want you to go see this guy. He says he wants to talk to you about reconciliation. And I thought, oh, great. In my mind, you ever see those cartoons when the wolf is looking at the chicken, and in his mind you see him sharpening a knife?
Right.
So in my mind, I started to develop a list of indictments. I was going in there, and I was going to crucify these people, or this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I go, the appointment was set, and I go into to his office, and it was typical Catholic office. That the heavy red velvet curtains, the large heavy crucifix, heavy oak furniture with red velvet on it. I mean, you couldn't steal anything from this guy's office because you couldn't lift it. It was just so big and heavy. And he sat on one corner of the room, and I was sitting in the other. And he said, "Well, I understand you have some issues with the Catholic Church." And I said, "Issues? Issues?" I said, "I wish I had it. Magazines have issues." I said, "I have real deep resentment." Anyway, before I was able to get into it, he said, without missing a beat, he said, "When was the last time you went to confession?" And in my mind, I thought, the nerve of this guy.
Right.
He's got them like grapefruits, this guy. How dare he ask me this question when I'm here to indict him? But since they got me when I was a little kid, I automatically said, I don't remember the last time I went to confession. And he says, how about now? I immediately went into the thing about, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And it was like an out-of-body Shirley MacLaine experience. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden, I'm responding like a kid. And I said, and he said, well, you know, I said, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I don't remember the last time I went to confession. What are your sins, my son? Now he's calling me son. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? But I somehow surrendered to the moment. And I said to him, I said, you know, Father, I said, I'm not going to get into all the things that I did. I did a lot of things that I'm not proud of. And I said, they're too numerous to mention. I said, but the one thing that I really feel a great deal of remorse for is that I hurt people. And sometimes I hurt people inadvertently and sometimes deliberately. But for that, I'm truly sorry and I feel regret. And then there was a pause. And he said to me, my son, on behalf of the Catholic Church, I apologize for all the wrongs that were done to you. And in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, I absolve you of all your sins. And now, my son, I leave you to the daunting task of forgiving yourself.
Wow. Checkmate.
And I walked out of that office, and I walked into the street. It was a bright, sunny day, and I felt this emptiness that I couldn't describe. I didn't know what was going on, but there was an emptiness. And what had happened was my resentment had dissolved, and I was left with my own stuff that I had to deal with. All the stuff that I had decided that was being blocked by this resentment was now there. And the emptiness that I felt was a part of my identity was gone because I had identified myself with that resentment. And what I learned was, and this is the poetry of the universe, that in order to forgive myself, I had to begin forgiving others. And I had to forgive the Catholic Church. I had to forgive the nuns and the priests, etc. And so I went to Brooklyn, which is where all this happened. I flew out to Brooklyn, and I had this ritual in mind. I was going to go to the church and to the convent, and I had this forgiving ritual. I was just going to just like let it go. And I drove to the church and the convent and the rectory and the school that were all in this one little compound. And when I got there, I was disoriented. And the reason I was disoriented was because it was no longer there. This big Gothic church, the convent, the rectory, everything was leveled and was like some apartment complex. And I realized that I had been keeping these people alive. They had been dead for a long, long time. But I was the one that kept them on life support. And my life changed after that. There's a really big part of my soul that awakened and started to breathe. It was resuscitated. And so it's really in the forgiving of others. And it doesn't mean that you make them right. It doesn't mean that they're right. It doesn't mean that it's okay. It just means that, I guess, by forgiving them, I make room in my heart for love. And as long as I harden it, there's no place for it to enter. If I keep it hardened, my heart, resilient, you know, just covered, just, you know, if I try to guard it, nothing can get in, nothing can get out.
Right. Yeah, I think that bitterness and resentment shut you down. Yeah, it
yes,
shuts
ma'am.
You down. And it keeps you from really being in the moment and really experiencing all of the love and joy that is around you. Always.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, there was a part of me that when I'm in resentment, I really like it because it gives me the illusion as momentary and as I said, the illusion of empowerment, superiority, and so that feels safe because underneath that is some kind of hurt. And that exposes a vulnerability that, you know, that frightens me to do. You know, it's not, vulnerability is a very difficult, particularly for men of my generation. We were not, you know, we were taught the opposite of exposing that part of ourselves, which is one of the reasons that guys of my age die sooner and, you know, they're not healthy because this notion of what it means to be a man, and part of it is to have a hard heart.
Mm.
And so, yes. You're right.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, men in your generation are killing themselves like crazy. I just read an article, like, typically we would think that, oh, the
are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Are you there? Can you hear me, Frank? Oops. Did I lose you?
Oh, there you are.
Okay, good. I was just saying that typically we feel that the highest risk for suicide would be usually teenagers, but that's not true. It's actually men in their 50s and 60s, especially after they retire. That's when they tend to kill themselves, and actually the numbers are going up. The men are unable to sustain this hard-heartedness without going into deep levels of despair. And I'm so glad that you were able to get out of that.
Well, I'm lucky. And even with all the work that I've done and the community that I surround myself with, the friends and my loved ones that I have around me, there's still times where I slip into that darkness. I mean, we really need each other.
Right.
You know, I mean, because I've done a lot of work, and I still have a tendency to slip into the dark side from time to time. We really need each other. I mean, I could not do this by myself, and it took me years to be able to admit that. I'm not supposed to be saying that. I'm a guy from, you know, an Italian guy from Brooklyn, with all the, you know, all the macho nonsense that was instilled in me when I was young. It's completely counter to the stuff that we're talking about. You know, and that's why I feel like I'm very lucky in that I can reach people that, you know, they understand me, and I understand. There's a big group of people that resonate with my experience. And so, you know, I have a job to do that I didn't know, nobody told me I was going to do.
But you
I had
listening.
No idea. I had no idea. I was elected to this position. And so, you know, if I don't do, you know, if I don't, you know, I feel like I have to do something. I want to, you know, make a difference. I just want to make a difference. And I didn't know how I was going to do that. And the universe provided me a way, and all I got to do is have the courage to step into it. And fortunately, I have people that do encourage me.
And I think it's also important, I'd like to point out, like, I think that sometimes when people feel like, oh, I just got to find my calling, I've got to find my vocation, that you could find your vocation, it could be bestowed on you in some way, and you're still going to have times of intense anxiety, of feeling disconnected, of feeling, you know, it's not like it ameliorates all of those places where we feel lost. It's
exactly.
Still there. Hopefully, though, you're creating good community to help you feel found, too.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, it's amazing how little willingness it takes. I mean, if just you just crack the door of willingness, it's so disproportionate, the amount of help that comes your way.
Mm.
You know, it really, it's like if you crack the door an inch, you'll get a yard of help.
Nice.
You know, a crack the door of willingness, just an inch.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's one of the reasons that drugs are so prevalent in our society, is that it gives you all those things, all, you know, the feelings that you think you're supposed to have without doing any of the work.
Right.
You know, you take a Demerol, and you're good, man. You know, you're good. Like, that's fine, and it numbs you out. The problem is that the drugs, it's not like, say, you've had a trauma in your life. You can't take the drug and target that trauma. It blankets your whole being. If you could just target that one trauma, you know, maybe that would be okay, and, you know, like, and then you can flourish in other ways. But it doesn't work that way. Your entire organism becomes affected by the drug. And so it's very tempting. I mean, I did it for 25 years. It's very, very tempting, seductive, and alluring. And it's also deadly.
Right, on a lot of levels.
Yeah. On a lot, and thank you, on a lot of levels.
Right, yeah. Gosh, Frank, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. I guess you're going to go meet Marianne Williamson now, huh? She's my hero. Tell her I said hello.
I will definitely. Well, you know, this is like when she does her lectures, you know, she's kind of, you know, I don't bug her, but I volunteer there every Monday because to me it's like, you know, I get to be, it's almost like being an altar boy in a sense. I consider this to be part of my spiritual practice coming here.
Yeah, it's a community. So, it's community.
And indeed.
That's
community
what I mean.
Is a spiritual experience, too.
Right. Yeah, that's what you need to help transform. Yeah, wonderful.
Indeed.
Okay, Frank, I look forward to speaking to you again. I know this conversation is not over, and I wish you well. May I be frankthemovie.com. May I be frankmovie.com. I'm going to try and get another screening here in Sebastopol again. Hopefully we could get you up for that.
But, I would love that. And also, again, you know, in a little while, you know, I'll be launching a website for anybody who would like coaching on any of the things we talked about. So that's going to be happening.
Wonderful. Oh, yes, absolutely. May I be frankmovie.com. Great.
Yes.
Thank you, Frank. And I'm going to go to Bahamas Lost in the Light, which is a song about forgiveness as well. And I will sign off here.
And thank you so much for inviting me. I really, really do appreciate it. I'm honored to be on your show.
Thank you, Frank. Yeah, so am I. Great.
I'm lost in the light. I pray for the night to take me, to take you to. After so many words, still nothing's heard. Don't know what we should do. So if someone could see me now, let them see you. It was my greatest thrill when we just stood still. You let me hold your hand till I had my fill. Even counting sheep don't help me sleep. I just toss and turn right there beside you. So if someone could help me now, they'd help you too. They help you too. See you through all the hard things we've all gotta do. Cause this life is long, and so you wouldn't be wrong. Free and free. Said some awful things and I take them back. If we would try again, just remember when, before we were lovers, I swear we were friends. So if someone could see me now, let them see you. Let them see you. All the hard things we've all